safe. Welcome to the Incomparables coverage of Ted Lasso Season 1. I'm Tiff Arment, your host for Episode 10, entitled The Hope That Kills You. And I've got my roster full of Ted Lasso loving panelists here to discuss this climactic season finale. Tony Sindelar is here. Hello, Tony.
Hello, Tiff. Hello, fellow jocks. It's me, Tony Sindelar, big sports fan. All about the sports.
Sports! I love some sports. Also here to enjoy the sports and the big game is Sage Young. Hello, Sage.
Hello. I'm here for the people who play the big game, and I'm here for the biscuits and for the tea. You know, I am a little bit more amenable to tea than our hero.
Come for the game, stay for the biscuits. And finally, we have the good Dr. Durang. Hello, good doctor.
Hello, I'm drinking carbonated water, so watch out.
Oh no, those bubbles will get you every time.
They will.
If for some reason you were someone who wandered onto our pitch and haven't been stopped by our man Nate, please know that we are full of spoilers. So let's get into this. I will start off by saying this episode features the classic final big match anticipation of many sports fictions, but as a whole, it's so much more. And we have Richmond versus Manchester City, and at the heart of it, Jamie Tart versus the team he thinks scorned him. And we have Ted, who has managed to build respect from his team. And we wonder if keeping that respect is also riding on this game. So basically, this episode, it opens up with Nate being confused with his daily tasks being completed by a new clubhouse attendant, and he thinks he's been sacked. But in line with all the good, happy feels of this show, we find out very quickly he's getting a promotion, the promotion he absolutely deserves, to assistant coach. Were all of you expecting this when you first watched it?
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh. Big time.
Sage is like, I'm on this. I knew it was coming a mile away.
Maybe. I don't know enough about soccer to know if this is at all believable. I like it. It's a very heartwarming moment, especially the spectacle of, the entire soccer team hiding in the office to pull up the Venetian blinds to cheer him on. And they come out and there's speeches and whatnot. I even enjoy how he almost starts telling Rebecca off and perhaps gets saved from himself by the reveal that he's the coach. But I don't know. Do Kitman ever actually get promoted to coaches? Certainly he seems qualified in terms of his knowledge of the game.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea whether or not that's actually realistic. I just, from the second that he started to contribute plays and from the first episode, Ted is listening to him and wants to hear what he wants to say. I was just like, my TV brain was like, oh, obviously, at some point.
Your TV brain is better than
they're going to get this guy up there.
I guess promoting the Kitman.
You shrew is such a great line, and yes. His delivery of that is so funny.
Nate may be my favorite character. I see a lot of myself in Nate. I just love that he is basically completely taken aback when anyone actually remembers his name, let alone like acknowledges his existence. And he is he's a delight. And I think that character, in addition to being a delight and my favorite, also it does some great, very subtle comedy throughout the series. So perhaps my favorite moment being when he orders the martini and then like spits it out because he is not prepared for it. That might be my best Nate moment. But this is a pretty good Nate moment also.
I was not expecting Nate to be made a coach, or at least I wasn't thinking of it. And so it became, oh, I don't know. I mean, I think when Higgins came in to the locker room and he and Ted were talking on the phone to each other, even though then it became clear, oh, this is what's going to happen. You Shrew is great, though. Yes, absolutely. I wrote it down.
It makes me laugh every time. Even just you saying it now, I'm cracking up.
I enjoy when he's given the whistle and he makes fun of Colin. Like the kind of like, he has this elevated sense of confidence and he almost doesn't, like he doesn't know what to do with it. And so he like directs this like this, kind of vulgar dig at the player that has been his bully at the start of the series. And it almost like you can tell it, like, it doesn't really work for him, but he doesn't know where to direct this energy because it is so foreign to him to have it.
But it it endears him further to the team. Yes, like you can see that they love it. And it's such a great like extension of, you know, in, when Ted gives him the notes, when he gives Ted the notes and Ted is like, you have to tell them this. It's such a great extension of like, now he has this like ability to, you know, talk crap at them. And he just is going to roll with it. Like that he just keeps roasting these guys and they're just like, oh my God, Nate, like their reaction to it. They're so proud of him. It's very sweet.
Yeah, he's such a meek character, but he's equipped with this wonderfully quick wit that it does. It endears him to the other players because he's funny and he is like roasting everybody. And now finally he is rewarded with this position where his little quips to everybody kind of feel more, I don't want to say more elevated, but they are a little bit coming from a higher place now.
Yeah.
I do. I love when they come out of the room and they're in the window at first. And it's like, I felt like this was a moment where it's like, Ted has worked his magic on every person there. And they're like united in their joy for Nate. Right. And you could imagine, obviously, this at the start of the season, they're all disaffected and unhappy and they don't like Ted and they are unaware of Nate's existence. But just the amount of joy they feel for this guy who was literally doing a crap job before, to see him elevated. They not only care, but are proud of him. And, I don't know. That's the Ted Lasso magic, right?
Yeah. The overall tone of this show up until the end is one of joy Ted has arrived and everything seems to be working for him. The team loves him. He's had his situation with Rebecca resolved and she's now fine and she's on the team with Ted and Higgins is okay. He's back from his exile and Roy is has worked things out with Keeley and he is kind of accepting his situation. And although we get a little bit of that in this show, it's everything seems to be going just great.
Everything's come up this one,
which, exactly. And we should be seeing that's not necessarily a great sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this episode as a whole is overall like a triumphant episode feeling. Everything is working together. He wouldn't be able to pull off the things that were pulled off in this episode during the big game if it weren't for the trust and it weren't for the respect now that everyone holds Ted up to. And we even see that from the people, you know, in the pub that they are, even though they still hold on to their loyalties, they have some faith in Ted. And I really like seeing that throughout this episode because I don't think any of it would have been possible if we hadn't spent, obviously, the whole season building towards this moment.
Yeah. So we covered
still
scene
a wanker,
one.
But they like
said
it.
Fondly. Yeah. Said fondly now.
I mean, it's even great when it comes to the point in the episode where Ted is asking Roy to pick a new team captain. Mm-hmm. And I really like that back and forth between them that goes on very long and in a very funny way and ends in a little bit of a little magic, which is always fun. But he says, you know, this is what it makes it hard to love you. And the whole idea that, like, he's able to say that now. And I think back all the way to the pilot when it's like, oh, he's really going to hate us when we win him over. I think that was one of the lines. And now we finally have that payoff. We have that moment of Roy in the office with Ted and them having that, you know, affection and respect towards each other.
It's such a great line and how it's delivered because he's still got the disdain in his voice. But it's like now the disdain is kind of at himself because he knows he does love Ted. It's so great.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, the first domino. Ted calls it the first domino that needs to fall is right in that man's heart, and it turns out to be true.
And in that scene, watching Coach Beard watch them is also a delight.
It's so good.
It's so good.
His reactions are so charming.
Oh, Beard.
So
I love Beard because I just think that he has this life that we will never truly know everything about. Like, he's like a man of mystery.
I wonder how much they are going to reveal of the Beard life in future seasons, especially coming up on season two, which is, you know, one of the reasons why we're doing this whole big watch through now when we are, that, like, how are these characters going to get expanded? You know, where's Roy going to go now after this, you know, season finale? Where is, what are we going to find out about Beard? I'm so curious.
Same.
Me too.
So in addition to Roy's domino of his heart falling, we do have Rebecca turning a corner, and we're seeing a much different Rebecca in this episode, where she is super encouraging and she's hopeful and enthusiastic, and she provides some wisdom and help towards Ted, who's feeling a little bit lost as he's approaching the he's looking at this large hill that he needs to climb in order for them to stay in the league and win this game, or at least tie, even though Ted hates ties. How do you guys feel about the change in Rebecca? She takes kind of a back seat in this episode, but it is really nice to see her support of Ted.
I think this is, you know, this is what we've been expecting of Rebecca eventually. I mean, we know what she's been, but she couldn't stay that way. It wasn't right. It wasn't in the cards, because underneath it all, you knew, because she was she was that way because she was so hurt, and that underneath it, she was a good person and she was going to have to turn around. And here we see her, you know, part of the team. She's in the locker room. She's in the locker room, both, you know, to give Nate his promotion. She's in the locker room after the loss, to share the sadness with the team. She's part of the team now. And I think she's been waiting for that for all 10 episodes.
I feel like she's kind of free in this episode in a way that she has never been before, right? She's always been kind of, I guess, prisoner of her plan, of her obligation to horrible men that she's been married to. And here she kind of gets to be like, we get to see her actually kind of fully realized in the ways that we only kind of got little glimpses or moments of before. I don't know. I know it's later in the episode, but I enjoy when she and Keely are in the stands waiting for the match to begin. And it's kind of like, they've been to like a million soccer games or football games, but they've never cared before. And it's almost like figuring out how to deal with that is weird. but a nice moment.
Yeah.
I am curious what they're going to do with her this coming season, because, you know, she had this really nice arc here in season one. There has to be some conflict coming up for her coming up, but We get to enjoy the nice Rebecca.
Yeah, and we know that she exists because of Sassy, right? Like, you know, Sassy tells, she tells Keely, like, you don't even know if you love this woman, then you're really going to love Rebecca. And because, like, we know that she's hampered by this problem in her divorce, but we don't really know that she's any different. Like, you sort of get the sense that, like, oh, maybe she has just been this cold career woman forever and she just really has a vendetta at this point. And then it becomes like, no, her personality used to be completely different, and she has sort of let this she's let this person prevail upon her for years, and she's been trapped by this for years, and she actually has a different personality. And so it's so great to see that comes out, like, the relief that you get from her when she comes clean. And it's like she just rides that relief through the rest of the season. Like, she's so happy that that's not hanging over her and that she can be the person that she used to be, which is really lovely. I also wanted to note, because she is sitting next to him in the locker room, that I've now watched Ted Lasso through 3 times. And I started to notice the last time that after Sam comes to her when they're trying to get rid of the ghosts in the training room, like, when he comes to her and makes that plea of, like, you're part of the team and we need you there, you should be there. Almost any time that you see Rebecca with the team, she is sitting or standing next to Sam. Like, she has formed a friendship with him, and she's sitting with him in that in the locker room after the loss. So I just love that, like, through line of, like, yes, she's there, but she also has, like, formed specific attachments to specific players. It feels like this, they thought of everything. Like, everything is so 360, which is one of the things that makes rewatching it, like, so satisfying.
So you mentioned that there's definitely, like, a distinctive arc for a lot of these characters, and we are seeing the conclusions of a lot of these stories kind of coming full circle. And I guess that leaves me, again, I keep wondering about the next season. Like, I'm so darn curious, like, where this is all going. But it is nice to, like, get some of these loose ends wrapped up. We do have some great scenes between Jamie, Roy, and Keeley. And I do love the awkwardness of all of them coming together. Especially, you know, Roy Kent and his crazy egg socks at the table. It's such a good scene, and seeing this conflict, I guess it gets resolved, but not in a very typical way that you would think it would, because we get some reveals about Jamie as well through the loss of his win and everyone else's loss. So I want to talk about that relationship a little bit.
Well, I think the Keeley Roy story is a great story, and is one that we're all interested in throughout the season. And it's nice to see them comfortable with each other in this episode. And then, of course, Keeley coming in to comfort Roy after he blows his knee out. And he's gruff and tells her to go away, but she doesn't, because she knows he doesn't mean it, and so on. The Roy and Jamie and Keeley segment at the breakfast table, though, she is completely in control of, as she has been throughout pretty much this series. It's really great how she handles the two of them, mm-hmm. and keeps it light, keeps them away from one another. They're still themselves, but she is sort of in control and making sure that the awkwardness goes in a way that she is fine with, and ultimately Jamie leaves and everything is fine.
And yeah, symbolic moment being when Roy has made her coffee and Jamie has brought her coffee, and
yes.
she combines them.
Yes.
It's also too, like, Jamie doesn't come over to see her to hook up with her. Like, I love when he texts her, and you can see that the last exchange they had was him with a U up eggplant. And she's like, are you serious? And then the next one, he sends her, like, a full sentence. Like, can I come over and talk to you? And the reason that he comes over to talk to her is because she is the only person who he can talk to about this. He can't talk to his new teammates about the fact that he still feels like Ted sold him out. And that is what drives him from the time that the loan is over. He thinks that Ted screwed him over, and he can't say that to his teammates. He can't tell them that he didn't want to go. And Keeley has proven to be his friend throughout all of this. Like, even when they were dating, she still was endeavoring to, like, better him, to give him good advice. And that's what he wants from her. So I love that scene, because he of course has to get a little dig in about how gross it is. And you kind of are like, well, you got to give Jamie a little bit of that now she's dating his teammate. Like, you're allowed to think that's weird. But the tension between them is so passive in that moment that it's just sort of, like, cute more than anything. And I really, like, what I most enjoy in that scene is, like, Keeley's relationship to Roy and Keeley's relationship to Jamie, and the way, like you said, like, she manages that without letting it boil over or become more strange than it is.
I mean, throughout this whole episode, we're seeing such an unsure Jamie. You know, he is reeling a little bit after thinking, like, he was basically kicked off the team, and then he can't quite wrap his head around, and that's one of the reasons he's going to Keeley. It's like, why is Ted acting so supportive? Like, on interviews, Ted is complimenting him and wishing him well. And then we get, like, that note at the end. Jamie is left, like, he's so damaged as a person that he can't understand the idea of someone supporting him, even through things that might be hard or might not go as great as, you know, you would think it would go. And we see that glimpse when his father is just absolutely, like, cruelly criticizing him when he ended up making the pass for that final winning shot. And it's like, Jamie doesn't understand and can't recognize support and can't recognize that, like, someone can be proud of you even when you're not doing your best or when you're not, like, the star, right? And it's like, that's such a, it's a sad, wonderful thing, but it's also great for the Jamie character that his character's starting to recognize that there's more out there to support than just being yelled at by, like, an overly critical parent.
And Keeley says it to him. She says, like, not everyone in your life is out to get you. Like, you have to understand that. And it does seem like perhaps he may be starting to understand that. That's the only real sense of, like, we keep talking about season two. The only real sense of what I think is going to happen in season two is that Jamie and Ted are going to come to some kind of understanding. But I mean, that's all I got.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Jamie's been acting the way he has been acting for the entire series, like, for this entire season, because he has been acting like everyone is out to get him, because so far I feel like in his life that that's has happened to him. And Ted coming along and offering all of this wonderful support regardless of performance, like, that is just changing his whole world.
But he's also let that happen, because when they're doing the ritual, he talks about his mother and how all his mother wanted was for him to be a good lad, and she didn't care if he won or lost. Mm-hmm. And it's like because abuse is such a powerful thing and it can drown out support. Like, he had that in his life. And when he says it's a certain point, like, you know, I don't think I worry that I'm not making her proud anymore. Like, that other side was just too loud and it drowned that out in his life. And so it's almost like he has to at a certain point, like, plug his ears to not hear that part anymore. Because it is there for him and it has always been there for him.
Yeah, and I think also, and this is not written into it, but it's I think a piece of Jamie's backstory. He's this extremely talented player, as all of them are, but him more so than anyone, maybe other than Roy. He has, since he was 12 or 13 years old, been special in this world, because he was singled out and he was going to be a star soccer player, and everyone knew that from the time he was very young. And he gets treated specially, but he also gets treated as an object. I think all of them are. People are always trying to get things from him. They're always trying to use his talent. I don't think I'm making this up, because you kind of got that out of Roy's story. Right. When he talked about, you know, going away when he was a kid to start playing soccer on some traveling team. Clearly, Jamie had the same experience. He's got his awful father along with it. But I think lots of people, other than his mother, have treated him sort of as a means to an end rather than just treating him as Jamie. Keeley would be an exception, and that's why he goes to her. He trusts her, because even after they broke up, you know, a few episodes earlier, she was still willing to help him out in the marketing thing. So that's why he's trusting her, and he's expecting to get a straight story from her about what evil thing Ted is doing.
And honestly, he trusts Roy in that moment, too, because he trusts Roy not to say anything. You know, the fact that he is willing to say that in front of Roy is, like, really speaks a little bit more to he, on some level, he has respect for him. And he knows that he's not the kind of guy who would, like, run to Ted to repeat what he said. But I also love the moment where Roy, like, locks his lips and throws the key at him and he ducks.
Yes.
It's so childish.
Still jerks.
Still jerks. Yeah. Bless. May they never change.
It's it's very impressive, especially, you know, at the start of the series, and you think, oh, it's going to be a sports show with some jokes, and look at this guy, he's the vain bully jerk, and then it's like, no, he's actually deeply damaged. And some of that is, you know, I think probably a commentary on professional sports in general, some of it the specific abuse that he has undertaken, but there's just the extent to which he has been used and therefore is not willing to kind of allow any kind of love or support or comfort into his life, especially from, you know, someone whose job it is to manage or coach him, right? Like that's a specifically suspect source that he is not going to let in. And even after spending a lot of time with Ted, still thinks Ted is doing perpetual mind games, that Ted is not a mind games person.
Right. So his relationship with Roy also, I can't help but think that he's seeing Roy as a reflection of like his future, where, you know, because Roy Kent was the great Roy Kent, right? That was like this whole thing. And now he is older. He's on the brink of retirement. It happens during this episode where he hurts his knee and it's just a career ending injury. And we knew that it was coming anyway because of the whole Roy having to pick the new captain. But when we see Jamie's reaction to Roy, like not starting the game and getting put in second, and we see kind of like the taunting or just the faces that get made, it's definitely one of those like mean reactions because there's so much fear there for like what, like I'm sure as the Jamie character, if you kind of like read into it, that he's thinking, gosh, that's going to be me in the future. Like one day it'll be my last game. One day I'm going to be the old man. Like I'm not going to be the special one anymore. And, you know, he is relentless towards Roy, but it's definitely out of fear because he doesn't know what he is if he isn't, you know, if he isn't a football player. Like what else would he be? And I feel like that the moment when in this episode, which I love, it absolutely brings me to tears, when Roy ends up blocking Jamie from making the goal, that when he hurts himself, it changes that dynamic a little bit. And so like, I think in the next season, when we see these two characters going forward, which I hope we do, like maybe we get a little bit more respect from Jamie out of this because of how Roy ended his career, how the fans absolutely loved him and honored him and were chanting his name when that like moment happened and he couldn't get up. Like it's absolutely heartwarming and amazing.
Yeah, I do. I mean, Jamie is still a jerk. And so, yeah, I mean, he has reasons for being a jerk, but he's still a jerk, and I still
not excusing his behavior.
Just, yeah. Oh no,
not
no.
excusing
oh,
his totally behavior. Still a jerk. Just explaining it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And everything, and you know, one of my possibly my favorite line in this show is Jamie's line as Nate is playing the video of Jamie in the locker room as an inspiration thing. And, you know, and he turns on Ted and he turns on Roy and all of that in the thing, even after saying that he's not going to say anything bad about his old team. But it's like a lot of Ted Lasso lines. It's a throwaway line, but he talks about this game and the prospect of the team going into relegation. This being the final nail in the ashes, which is sort of, that sums up Jamie.
He also mentions instant caramel in that conversation.
Understood that until you said it there.
Yeah, instant caramel.
That he means karma or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that was some weird Britishism. Nope.
It's just gonna knock you right in the head.
Okay.
So I definitely, absolutely, we need to talk about all of the special chaos plays that get put into this episode. I love a good montage. I love a good a betterment montage. I love when like people are planning and doing things. It's like the Mighty Ducks moment, right? And so I kind of adore that about this episode when the team is all revved up from watching Jamie's video as they were kind of expecting it to happen. A chair gets thrown at a television.
Which is, that's what gets him qualified to be captain.
That's right. Well said.
And so then they come up with the idea of forming all of this chaos thanks to Rebecca and her phrasing of every disadvantage has an advantage. Ted enthusiastically runs out of her office, bumping his head, and the chaos has begun from there. And now we see the team kind of building up all of these ideas. And I really like how they're all coming together and they don't question for a second Ted's idea to like run some trick plays. Like nobody says a bad word about this idea and they all go along with it because I think they all see that this is kind of their only chance.
I think they just are having fun playing again. And it just sounds like a lot of fun to do that. And they get really into it. Like Keely is constantly reminding, particularly Roy, you get paid to play a game. Yes. You put on a little outfit and you go out and you play a game, which is not to discount anything that anybody is doing. It's obviously nothing that I could do. But it is like you have to put it into perspective at a certain point. And, you know, they're all dreading this game. They're all dreading facing Jamie again. Like, you got to do it. You might as well have a really good time. And it is your best shot. And I love how into it they get. I was like, in my TV nerd element, like watching that scene for the first time where they are shouting out the names of all those plays, I was like, I would have loved to have been like in the writer's room where they were like, let's just come up with names for trick plays and people, and someone's just like exactly like they were in the show, like writing them on the whiteboard. Which ones are we going to use? The names are all particularly excellent. I can't even like pick a favorite.
Beckham's Todger.
Beckham's Todger. I don't know if that was. It's dirty.
Yes. And then the poutine, not dirty.
Not dirty. Very Canadian. Yeah.
Like all good montages, there is music playing in the background, mm-hmm. and it perfectly appropriately, it's Sweet Georgia Brown, the Harlem Globetrotters theme song, because it's all trick plays. That's a very well done scene, and it doesn't last very long, but it is so crisply written as almost the entire series is. It gets you into it. The music is perfect for it. It doesn't seem, a lot of montages of course go on too long. This one doesn't. It's, you know what's going to happen.
This whole episode is very tight. Like there's so much happening. I mean, we have an entire game to really get through, and the enthusiasm and the who's going to win, or like, oh, we're up 1 point and no, we might tie. Like there's so much drama going on in this episode, but yet they give all of that time to continue the team building, to continue the character development, to continue the relationships. They put a lot into this episode, and I don't even think it was extra long, was it? From the other episodes?
Yeah. It feels like it's a full sports film packed into, you know, the arc of a whole film packed into 30 minutes.
Yeah, I think it was a little longer than 30 minutes. Because I looked to see how, because we got into the game, we start showing up at the dog track 15 minutes into this show. There is more soccer game in this show than there has been the entire season, I mm-hmm. think.
Yeah,
despite all the other things that we've got going in this, we've got more traditional sports stuff, sports plotting in this show than we have in any of the others.
I mean, we even have that moment where we have the scene where they are in Ted's apartment and planning, and then they even make time for Ted to have a FaceTime call with his son, and mm-hmm. his son even makes a comment about how, like, it doesn't look like you're doing anything like, while you're playing. And I guess that kind of reflects the entire series, right? Like, the season so far, it's, you know, it doesn't look like you've been really doing much of anything, and then all of a sudden he's doing everything, right? Like, this whole episode is just jam-packed full of coaching.
Well, that sets up the fact that it's the team that calls the lasso special.
Yes, yes.
At the end,
I didn't know those rules. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they can yell things out, but it's, you know, it's clearly it's not like what Ted is used to, where a football coach can calls every damn play and is intensely involved in the game as it goes along. It is more of a player's sport, sort of the way basketball is more of a player's sport. But we're set up with that as he tells the kid that, you know, I don't do anything. The players are, you know, I just set them up and then the players do it. Well, that's exactly what happens. And of course the players call the lasso special because they don't have much time left and they're going to do it for Ted.
Getting emotional all over.
So the lasso, it does work. The lasso special, it's a modified play to make them look like they're playing American football, and it's meant for confusion. It completely confuses the other team and it gets through. And I think that this is where we see a difference from, you know, the standard sports fiction that we see oftentimes. It's like they're so busy celebrating after that play that they kind of like forget to look around about what's going on. And the play continues kind of without the audience for a second. And everyone is caught by surprise. I really appreciate that shift here because it felt like such that amazing enthusiasm. Like we get the whole rekindling of the spark of the hope by all the phones ringing and the score from the Crystal Palace game coming in. And we realize, oh my gosh, we only need a tie to win. This could happen. The lasso special happens. The point gets had. And then all of a sudden we're like thrown back into this action of like panic, and it's such a roller coaster. I love the way they do that in this episode.
Yeah, I was just looking up the director. It was MJ Delaney, because the direction of this episode is incredible, and especially like, you know, it exactly as you said, it's like play continues and we don't notice it. The audience is completely out of the loop for as long as the players are, as long as the Richmond players are. And it's that, and then it's the way that this director captures like the heartbreak. It is just, you know, we've all seen a million sports movies and sports TV shows, like, you know how it's supposed to go. But to me, this is one of the upper echelon.
I love the transition where, you know, Ted is like, you are not looking at any of the scores. You care about this game. You know, it doesn't matter. We're playing to win. You're doing your best here. And then it's like, okay, but we'll take a tie if that like keeps the team from being disbanded. That's all you need to do now.
Yeah, that I think exactly, Tony, that that switch in Ted was just as good as the team's whole switch on him. Mm. You know, he broke his rules because the team needed him to break his rules.
Yeah.
And it happens very quickly, and he just turns on a dime. This is what we need. Okay, fine. I didn't want it to happen this way, but it's happened this way. Let's go.
Even the pairing of that with Nate realizing that all the cell phones are going off and then immediately concluding kind of what's happening as if he is reading it out of the air
as if he has his phone
magic
in front
powers.
Of him. No, he doesn't. Yes.
Nope.
That's it's such a cool modern take on receiving news, the way that went. And that's exactly what would happen in a sports game now. Like, right, everyone would get the news on their phones and have that like joint moment of it all being notified at the same time. It's really very cool. The energy that happens here in this portion of the episode is just so very special in a really dynamic way.
Yeah. So, and one of the other things that I liked about it, you know, before things turned around and Jamie scored the winning goal, is that we saw Danny Rojas score a goal.
Yes.
And the pass from Sam. Now we know Sam's going to pass, right? I mean, that's because he's the team player. That was set up long ago. There are two things about this show, from a logical point of view, that have bothered me. One of them is how is it that Rebecca and Sassy were in the same class together? Because they're clearly 10 years apart. And unless British public schools separate their girls by height instead of by age, it makes no sense that those two women were classmates together as girls. The other one is Danny Rojas, who we are told, and it's even demonstrated earlier, that he is essentially another Jamie Tart. He's another ace. And yet the team stinks when Jamie leaves, even though they still have Danny. Well, now we see Danny, you know, make a great play. It still bothers me a little bit that they sunk so low while having Danny on the team, but at least we get to see Danny really show off, and it's not just a standard kind of kick too. I mean, he's flipping over on his head basically to make the shot. It's very nicely done.
I feel like Rojas is kind of like the wild card character, where he's very good, but he might not be well groomed yet. And so maybe that could be an explanation for why he hasn't been like as highlighted throughout the season. I mean, and he kept like injuring himself because he's so he's so wild. Like, he's like a wild stallion, right? Like, every once in a while it'd be amazing, but then it's like you got to tame it in sometimes. But this time it was perfectly tamed, and we got to see this wonderful play by him. And I thought that part was really cool. They slow it down, the action and everything.
Yeah, it looks so cool.
It does look, it looks cool as hell.
It's like Roy Hobbs hitting the home run at the end of The Natural, you know. it's classic. And that's the thing about this episode. So much of it is just cliche, but they do it right, mm-hmm. and they do it well, and it doesn't bother you. You're with right. them. They have, I mean, they've Ted... built you up through the, yeah.
Go
they
ahead.
Built you
Sorry.
Up and you're, they built you up and there's, and you get carried along with it because they've done such a good job with everything up until the game. They do a good, great job with the game too. They don't overdo it. It just, you get carried along. And afterwards, you think, I thought about it. You know, well, you know, of course that's what happened. Of course I have all of those things happened. But in the moment, as I'm watching it, it's great.
It's Ted even brings in the reference. Like, he contextualizes this game by telling them, in America, we have a saying, do you believe in miracles? Like, I mean, he brings up... one of the most famous phrases in American sports and in American sports movies. And I love that they're like, was that a movie or is it real life? Both.
That's so good.
And it really does, like, it sets that stage for you where it's like, I was trying to describe this to people because I'm sorry, I'm going to go off on a tiny bit of a tangent. I'm also rewatching Friday Night Lights right now, which is interesting in having, you know, watched and rewatched Ted Lasso as well. Two shows where coaching is very important, two very different types of coaches. And I found that in watching it, like, a lot of people compare Coach Taylor to Ted Lasso. And my take on that is always like, Ted Lasso is a fantasy world. I mean, it is a fantasy world. Like, this place, this world does not exist. What Ted Lasso is saying is that it should exist, but there is, like, no universe. There is no locker room that Keeley could walk into without people being rude to her. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you have to understand that this is wish fulfillment. This is what the world could be. It's like when you watch Schitt's Creek and there's no homophobia or, you know, stuff like that. Like, it's like we're not presenting the world as it is. We're presenting the world as we think that it should be. And so framing that, so having Ted be like, we are the team in the movie really fit that to me. Like, this is not reality that we're existing in.
This whole show also gives you that wonderful excuse, as you said, like, so much of it is exactly like, to make a pun, play by play of a lot of sports movies. But so much of it is like letting you know that, like, hey, it's okay. You could like this. Like, yeah, it's okay. Yeah, exactly. To like the,
what if,
like
what
the
if
stuff.
Sports, but only love and joy and right. Very yeah. little toxic masculinity.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's can, okay can you to even find imagine joy that? In.
So let me ask a question okay. as somebody who has seen very few sports movies, because not a sports person, or even a sports movie person. I think I'm always taken aback a little bit by this episode at where you could kind of imagine the episode ending and then it keeps going. So are there other sports movies that end on kind of a down moment slash showing the kind of emotional fallout and the implications
Ooh,
for people's lives?
A League of Their Own.
Okay.
I would say a League of Their Own is the first one that comes to mind for me.
Yeah. Yeah. The hero team loses.
Yeah. The hero
I think
team
I'm
loses.
Used to the, like, the sports movie ends with, like they win and they get carried off the field. And this is like,
totally.
No, we go into the locker room and people are sad. And in fact, we even go into the next day. And, like, let's take a moment to ponder what this means
we
for
people's
lives. We
talk about our feelings.
Yeah.
in a League of Their Own, honestly, it lasts years.
Yeah.
Right?
It does, yeah.
Basically, A League of Their Own is two sisters, and they're both on the same team for a while, and then the other sister gets traded. One of the sisters gets traded, and then they end up, it comes down to the two of them, like, running for home, and the other one's the catcher, and the one who everyone thinks is the better player loses the ball. And sorry for anyone who hasn't seen League of Their Own, but sorry.
Now we're
going
to have to do an incomparable episode about League of Their Own.
It's the best movie ever.
Spoilers
and
for a movie from 1992.
Yeah, from 1992. And there's so much, like, you know, if you watch the movie, they're sort of like, did she let her win or did she not? You know, and so because the movie is all about the relationship between these two sisters. So that means more than necessarily like the team and who won what game and whatever. So there is a lot. And then there is discussion after that of what does that mean and how do people feel? And there is sadness. That's the first one that came to mind. I'm sure there are more, but
yeah,
this is
ending number two. You know, and ending number one, which is far more popular, is the triumphant ending. But ending number two is the loss and this sort of downer ending. And but this doesn't do, I mean, that often ends up with with the death of a player or something like that. I'm thinking like the Lou Gehrig story I'm not sure how the Babe Ruth story ends, but I know the Lou Gehrig story does not end well because there's a disease named after him.
Yeah, I figured that out.
Spoilers.
Yeah. The spoiler alert. Yes, exactly.
Spoilers for history.
Well, I just Googled it and AV Club has a list. We aren't the champions. 11 yeah. sports movies where the losers are winners. Bull Durham. That's true. I mean, Rocky, because standard. Anyway, there's more.
Yeah, but Rocky is still a triumph even though he loses.
Exactly.
Well, he picks another movie and then he wins later.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that it entirely counts. I mean, yeah, I know what they're going for.
There,
but
listen,
because he does
if
lose.
You would like to Google this list, I won't read all of them, but they're digging pretty deep on here.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's some that I probably would not count, but. Cool Runnings. Cool Runnings is a good one.
Cool Runnings is at the top of Tony's very limited list of sports movies he's seen. So
it's a great film. And they,
I mean,
they
if they
lose.
Had won the big match in this episode, you know, the final of the first season, you know, where would they go? Would we have anticipation and eagerly like awaiting the next season of like, ooh, what are they going to do? Are they going to make it? Are they going to get better? Are they going to get, you know, reinstated? Or I don't really know much about besides what they taught you in the show.
Yes, I only works. Know. I appreciated that they reminded us what relegation means. I was like, thank you.
Rebecca
know.
Says it's called promoted unrelegated.
Well,
so she taught us all.
I think, like, you know, they're leaving us on the hook here. Yeah. You know, they have to give us something else to hope for because now we have the team loving Ted. Like, yes, goal checked. Like, I mean, pun intended. You know, like, we have that part is set. Now where are we going to go? Like, they can't win. They can't win and also have won Ted. You know, like, both winnings can't happen if we're going to have a complete like series that is going to go on to another season.
And they raise that specter in the show. It's not just, oh, we're going to lose and that's sad. It's, oh, our team is going to be broken up and our little family is no longer going to be intact. And we don't necessarily have any control over that. And And that's sad. I mean, that's the real kind of where do these people get? And we have the moment where Rebecca and refuses to let Ted quit, and you know they're going to say, and he's going to win the whole thing. But it is like, but what about everybody else? Who gets to be? Who gets to stay and be in Ted's orbit? You know, we assume that Jamie will re-enter that orbit whether he's on the team or not. But I mean, you know, Roy kind of looks like he's done. I don't know how many coaches you can have on a team, especially a team that's been relegated. Can they have like, here's all the people that can't play soccer anymore. They're coaches now. But
yeah, we already just got Nate as yeah. like, the new coach.
They specifically in the trailer, like only show Roy like in street clothes, which was interesting.
So we should talk about the locker room quickly, because Ted manages in his true Ted Lasso fashion to celebrate the victories even in this super defeated locker room after the game is over. And
Ted gives
a great
eulogy.
This wonderful thing.
He really does.
He says this big bit about being alone and sad, and how that's so much worse than like being together and sad, and that they can be sad together. And then eventually they bring it around to, you have to be the goldfish, like they brought up in the very beginning of the series. I always keep saying series, I mean season, in the very beginning of the season, and how, you know, they're going to have a short memory about being sad, but they're going to move forward. And I love the way that he is able to bring that out in the team and have everyone kind of look around and appreciate what they have. And I think that that's a really difficult thing to do when you are feeling really down about everything. You know, it's so easy to be defeatist about everything in your life, but Ted manages to turn everyone's minds around, and it's a really wonderful thing.
And he does it while allowing them to be sad.
And
validating that, and say, yeah, of course you're sad. Of course you are. He's not, you know, we got to pick yourself up off the ground and get going right now. And tomorrow we're going to do this, and tomorrow we're going to do it. No.
Yeah. It's a terrible thing. Let me come out as a
terrible thing that's happened to us all.
Yeah. It's like your feelings are real. Please feel them.
Oh my gosh, they're validating feelings. They're
validating feelings.
There's a wonderful supportive locker room. It's
disgusting.
It's
un-American.
I think Sage did it wonderful. Like, you did it such justice by comparing it to Schitt's Creek, like this idealized world of this could be the way people treat each other. And
right.
This kind of wonderful.
There's no reason why it shouldn't be. It just unfortunately is not.
Well, men.
And there's
we're building.
You know,
we're
working on the men. We're working
I'm just saying,
on
them. There's a lot of us.
We're trying. I love too. Like, it's like, it doesn't really hit you, or it didn't really hit me because of the way that Ted delivers that speech. You know, and he ends it with onward, forward. And then the next day he walks into Rebecca's office and gives her his resignation because he doesn't want to let her – he doesn't want her to have to fire him. Like, he's giving this speech to these men about how, like, we are going to move on from this and we're going to keep going. And the whole time he's thinking, this is it for me. And he's still able to do that for them. And I think that's, like – that's what makes him a great coach, is that he's never centering himself in any sort of situation. It's always about the players. It's always about the team. It's always about the community that he's created, that he wants to strengthen. And the ending, by the way, is foreshadowed by no less than Trent Crim, the Independent. You know, like, he writes in that profile of him, like, he's going to fail, but I'm not going to be happy to see that happen, basically. Like, you know, and that is what ends up happening. Like, Ted fails. But the entire town is devastated by that, where they would have probably made fun of it, you know, 2 months previous.
Yeah, and of course,
they end up sad instead of angry.
Yeah.
And I think they would have been angry earlier.
They already smashed the TV. So what are you going to smash next?
And it doesn't seem like there's any blame getting passed around either. Like, it happened. It was, you know, bad luck, really, of how everything felt. Jamie happened to, you know, for 2 seconds get out of his own way and pass the ball. And so that way he was able to, you know, the team was able to win. So there really was no, like, you know, you did this, or blame being passed around. And I really appreciate that part of it, too.
It does feel like an extremely high level of mature, I assume, for sports, but life in general, that it wouldn't be, who do we blame for this?
Yeah. Right?
Like someone is at fault here, either a player or a coach, or, you know, despite the fact that, you know, inherently someone is going to win or lose in this game, but that someone must suffer for this.
Well, I mean, we're set up, you know, we cannot beat Manchester City.
Mm-hmm. Right. You
know, Nathan told us that, and Nathan knows more about soccer than any of us do. Mm-hmm. So it made sense that the miracle couldn't hold, and it's a satisfying ending. They go into, again, another beautiful piece of putting a song behind things, where they play "You Never Walk Never Walk Alone," which is, I think I looked it up, because that is a song that people sing at soccer games. I think it started in Liverpool because Jerry and the Pacemakers had a recording of that in the 60s. But the interesting thing is, in the lyrics of "You'll Never Walk Alone," is the line that "there's hope in your heart," which of course counterbalances the whole point of the show and the title of the show. It's the hope that kills you. It's a nice little bookend to that. Although that's not the last song in it, but it's a beautiful choice, because it's a soccer song. It's a well-known soccer song, but it also has the word hope in it to counterbalance the hope killing you, which did, you know, everybody's disappointed. The hope did kill them.
So,
and on that note,
woof. It's also the whole, like, if you were trying to throw the thing about the show the thing about the plotting, which I feel like, you don't think a lot about the plotting in a show like Ted Lasso, because there's so much other stuff going on, and the character stuff is so great and performances are so great. And, you know, you don't think of it as a plot heavy show. But if you were going to start throwing blame around, you know, like, Ted could blame Rebecca for giving Jamie back to Man City, but Rebecca could blame Ted for teaching Jamie to make the extra pass. Like,
Ted could blame Rebecca for setting up this whole, you know, charade of bringing an American coach to fail.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of blame that could go around, but specifically with that shot, that last shot, like, you know, it just happened because these people are who they are and they did what they did. And that's it. There's nothing, there's no fingers to point.
So any kind of final words before we wrap up? Anything we want to mention, or favorite moments, or just anything we might have missed from this episode?
Tiff, Richmond on 12.
Richmond on 12.
Yeah, on 12 was... Of course, that he missed 8 was also good. But just the idea that we're going to count to 12 to do it. Yeah. And everybody's sort of looking around. Okay, we're going to go with Isaac. It's fine. That was great.
The only thing that I had left in the tank is that I just, in general, we haven't talked a ton about Roy. But I think what I really enjoy Roy as a character is that it is this exploration of how male anger can be useful and not dangerous. Mm. You know, I think there are that when you're focusing on a character's anger and it being sort of like righteous or whatever, it's usually like, oh, like we will like, this woman has a right to be angry. Of course she does. And, you know, we see a lot of very destructive male anger on television. And I think Roy shows this, like, there's nothing wrong with Roy Kent being angry that he got old and that he can't play like he used to. Like, aging is unfair. Like, our lives are not fair. You are allowed to be upset about that. And the fact that he is just absolutely driven by his hatred for Jamie, that he is able to get that ball out from under him, that he is able to make that that he's able to make that move and then ultimately gets hurt from it. It's his anger that drives him. And, you know, Nate says that to him back in Liverpool. You know, you need to be driven by your anger. That's what makes you who you are. And I just think that it is what I love about Ted Lasso in particular is that, you know, it is not a show that is naive about that you can pick and choose the emotions that you feel in your life, like that you can always be happy or that you can always be grateful and all these things. Like, you know, we've seen Ted at like the very like rock bottom of his life. Like we've seen him yell at people. We've seen Roy be angry. We've seen all of these people like, you know, we've seen them be petty, all of this stuff, and that there is value to be found in that if you are willing to do the work. And I just love that Roy comes like full circle with that anger, and he really lets it drive him to have like that one last great moment on the field, which I hope will like carry him through the fact that he now has to retire.
Mm-hmm. The thing that I noticed that we haven't talked about, and it's very small, is that Rupert is humanized in this show. He really cares about the team. It devastates him that the team is being relegated. He's in joy when they make the score, even though it's Rebecca's triumph. He can't help himself. He loves the team, and seeing Rupert not as an evil bastard entirely is a little disconcerting. I kind of liked having, you know, we've got Jamie obviously on his way to redemption. I'm not sure I'm ready for Rupert to be redeemed, but there it is. It's the Ted Lasso effect, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking of the way we are able to see him kind of in his home, you know, being kind and affectionate to his current fiance girlfriend. And it was just it was a moment where it's like, wow, I don't just like completely hate you. It doesn't feel like that the revenge Rebecca was seeking throughout the entire season was really I wasn't mad that he wasn't super affected, like, and I wasn't also like joyful that he might have been a little bit affected. I was just like, oh, it's kind of nice just seeing him be. And I'm glad that they interjected those clips of him watching the game from his own home in order to kind of bring him down, that he's not just like this guy walking around wreaking havoc in everyone's lives and we want him to like just disappear forever. It was a nice touch that they added him into the finale.
I guess I read it as a little bit more sad, where, you know, everyone else is at the stadium, or we have the huge group at the pub, and you have all these people that are experiencing it together. And then Rupert is there with his fiance. It seems like maybe she is not invested at the same level he is. And he's in his kind of sterile, you know, luxury apartment. And we're always seeing it like from the like TV view, that just makes it feel almost, I don't know, there's something about it that makes it feel like he's living in a box.
Oh, well, now I've and changed my whole mind.
Sorry, I just feel like he is comparatively, no, I really he is do. Alone. He has no other friends. He could be at the pub.
I see it both ways now.
That's not a place he would go. He cannot go to the stadium because he lost the bet, but he is alone. He is alone with the woman that, you know, unclear how valid his feelings are for her, slash, you know, does she care about the game he cares about? And he has no other friends.
Rupert is not a part of that community has been enriched by Ted and Rebecca at this point. Like, he is totally separate from that. I totally agree with that reading. I didn't really feel like he was redeemed at all in that moment.
Now I changed my mind. Sorry. I'm on their team now.
Sorry.
Well, and even just the, like, you know, the pub is the like the warm, friendly place, and it's like, you know, you can see that it's like messy and it's got like the browns and the richness. And his place, it's like the sterile white luxury apartment lit by the like purple and blue glow of his TV, in just like a sad, lifeless cage. Sorry, rich people. enjoy your money.
Yeah, everywhere else is there's a community, and Rupert's kind of left alone.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, he's made his bed and he's lying in it, but he comes off as more human in this show, in this episode, than he ever has. And
I don't know. And, I don't agree.
Oh, okay.
I'm still in the middle of the fence. I see both sides.
I'm very interested in what they do with him in the next season, too. And obviously, he's kind of a minor character. You know, it's not like my concern for Roy. I'm not really concerned about Rupert, but I am curious about what happens to him and how he has some humanity to him. He really does love the team. And what does that mean for how he's going to act in season two?
So before I close us out, I just want to mention that spit take, the very end. it brings us right back to the very first pilot episode when he spits all over all of the reporters. It also brings us back to the first time he tasted tea in Rebecca's office. I'm very upset by how clear the picture is of all the water all over Rebecca's face. Like, it's very upsettingly sharp. I'm like, no, HGTV, no. It's too much. So I do like that they have that. It is funny that they throw that in there. I could have done without it, completely honestly. You know, like, I liked it, but if it weren't there, I wouldn't have missed it.
The last time I rewatched this in its entirety, I watched it with my parents because I went to go visit them, and my mom kept being like, are they gonna get together? And I was like, no, he just spit water all over her face. They're not gonna get together. They're friends. Stop being weird.
Yeah, not so, everyone has to get together.
Listen, sorry if people ship Ted and Rebecca, but you're wrong, and they should just be buddies.
It's true. I think there should be more buddies. There should be more buddies.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Like, Ted should definitely get with somebody, but not Rebecca. No.
It's going to be sassy.
It should be me.
All right. Well, on that note of hope, the hope may have killed us a little bit this time. But if they didn't win the match in the first season, then we wouldn't so eagerly await the next. So, well, let me thank this panel of dedicated fans for showing up for the big match. Dr. Ang, thank you so much.
Thank you. Like Edith Piaf in the last song, I regret nothing.
Sage Young, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Keep believing.
And Tony Sindelar, thanks to you too.
Goodbye, nerds.
Why did I have to say it super weird to you?
I know, that's because that's how you talk, Diff.
Everyone was just so insightful, and thank you really all. It was wonderful discussing this amazing episode with you all, and thanks for everyone for listening and joining us on this season one rewatch. And I think we are ready for the return of Ted Lasso for season two on Apple TV Plus on July 23rd, and we can't wait to earn that promotion and keep on believing. Let's be gosh darn goldfish together.